Hi, I'm Jackie Wicks with Peer Trainer, and I'm welcoming Dr. Sarah Gottfried. Dr. Sarah, hello. I'm so glad you're here.
Hi, Jackie. Hi, everybody. So happy to be with you.
Yeah, and we are starting the first class. We're kicking this off, the Peer Trainer Hormone Reset Program. Now, Dr. Sarah is going to take us step by step and talking about how we can reset the hormonal balance naturally. You know, just a quick recap, if you didn't remember, she's the head of the Gottfried Center, Harvard, MIT trained, faculty at the University of San Francisco. UC San Francisco. But I want to talk about quickly some of the things that we're going to learn in the program. I want you to understand this is a checklist. So the first thing, which Dr. Sarah talks about, that you're not crazy, you're not a lousy mom, wife, entrepreneur, it's not a moral failing going on. And we're going to talk about how to fix these things. Also, second thing, what's causing the top symptoms? Because she studied 10,000 patients over the last 10 years to really identify this. And we're going to talk about the best part, which is really the three-step solution on how to reset this thing. And, you know, I always want to know, okay, we're going to talk about all this, but what is this going to do for me? Why am I going to listen to this? And the biggest thing is, obviously, it's going to help with the weight loss, help with the belly fat, and you're going to feel like yourself again. And Dr. Sarah was telling me a little bit about why we don't feel like ourselves necessarily and how we do get back there. So the first thing we're going to talk about in class one, and we're going to dive right in, cortisol. What is it? Why is it important? How do we fix this problem? And so with that, Dr. Sarah, again, welcome. Psyched to start learning about this stuff and starting to really come up with the ways to fix it, more importantly.
Absolutely, Jackie. And I have to say, what I want to do today is I want to kick cortisol to the curb. We're going to talk about what it does, why it takes over your life, why it makes you feel overwhelmed, cranky, and maybe like a terrible parent, and lays down that belly fat that's so hard to get rid of. I also just wanted to say one quick thing, if I may, Jackie. My family is originally from Texas, and we have this saying there. You know, Brene Brown talks about how she's a fourth-generation Texan, and lock and load is kind of her motto. So the way we used to frame Harvard is that she went to Harvard, but she overcame it. So I just wanted to, like, put that humble opinion out there that, yes, I'm trained as a physician scientist, but really I'm here as a mom, as a woman, as someone who has struggled with these things and has figured out how to get out to the other side.
Yeah, and good point, because it is true. Sometimes you go to the physician office and you feel intimidated, and sometimes you don't even want to discuss some of these private things because you feel like, oh, I don't. It's almost like telling the principal of your elementary school. So I love when I can feel more comfortable talking about these things and not feel like I'm necessarily going to be judged for some of the mistakes I make.
Well, I think that's such an important point, because the tendency, especially when you have hormonal imbalances that are making you feel overwhelmed, the tendency is to feel like you're doing something wrong and it's your fault. Like, if you could just buck up, if you could just pull yourself up by your bootstraps, you could do this whole thing called life better. And the truth is, there are hormonal reasons that are making you feel that way. So that's what I want to turn around today. And that shame that we have, you know, the reluctance that we have to show our vulnerability, to look like women who have our act together, I just want to put that aside today.
Perfect. I mean, and I know that when we talked about in the first call, you talked about how you've discovered this, obviously, through yourself and through your patients, but really that those analogies that you used, the first one was the Charlie's Angels. You know, here are the three things that have to support you, and here's what makes our weight loss harder, and us not feel like ourselves. And, I mean, obviously, the first one that you were saying was cortisol. And I have to say, in my experience, of course I've heard about cortisol, but it's really from that ad of, you know, you're not losing weight, it's not your fault, it's the stress, and the cortisol is making your belly bigger. But that's really the only thing that I've heard that, you know, that I understand. And what I'd love you to do is almost paint the picture of what cortisol looks like in the profile. You know, I'm 40-something for the 60-something, and really talk about why this is affecting us so much when we're trying to lose weight and get ourselves back.
So delighted to go there. So cortisol is really interesting. For some reason, we have this idea about cortisol that it's the stress hormone, I need to reduce stress, and then we don't go much further than that because I think we just don't talk about it. We don't have the deeper conversation about what this hormone does. So I want to talk a little bit about the job description of cortisol and not the incredibly boring conversation that's on Wikipedia, for instance, because, oh my gosh, if you read that, your eyes are going to glaze over within about 10 seconds. So one of the things I think about with these hormones is, if I was on a bus with these hormones, what would they be doing? And I feel like cortisol is the big guy who sits down next to you on the bus and like takes up way too much space. Like his big leg is up against yours. It feels totally creepy and you're getting a little scared. You kind of want to run away. That's what cortisol feels like. And I can tell you about the others, too. I mean, thyroid is kind of like the sneaky guy under the bus who's letting all the air out of the tires so that you feel like, oh, I just can't get this bus up the hill. But cortisol has a couple of jobs. It's got, well, actually a few hundred jobs. But the top three are that cortisol raises your blood sugar. So it does that so that you can run or fight. But it backfires because women spend so much time feeling stressed out over sometimes major things, but often minor things. Like I mentioned school lunches. School lunches get me totally stressed out and raise my cortisol. And when you have that high blood sugar, it raises insulin, which is that fat storage hormone. It may make you leptin resistant. It makes you grow a muffin top, maybe even a cake top. So that's one of the jobs of cortisol. A second job is that it raises your blood pressure. And a lot of women don't see this until maybe their 40s, 50s, 60s. It's funny, I was telling you, Jackie, about my mother reading my cortisol chapter in my book, The Hormone Cure, and she's had high blood pressure for a long time, and she said, oh my gosh, I never put it together that being a stress case is actually raising my blood pressure. Like, I knew that stress could raise it, but I never, like, put two and two together.
And this is your mother.
And this is my mother, right. I mean, I've been talking about cortisol for, I don't know, 20 years. And then this third job is related to immune function. This one's a little less sexy and maybe relevant for everybody. But if you have trouble, you know, say you have children and you feel like you catch every virus they bring home, or you get sick or cut yourself and it takes a little longer to heal than it used to, that can be cortisol that's off. It can either be too high or too low. Most of the time, it's too high. So those are three main jobs that cortisol does that kind of gives you a sense of what happens when this hormone is out of control. Usually too high, but when you are making too much cortisol over a long period of time, you burn out production, and then you have low levels.
So how do I know what I have? How do I know? If I have belly fat, my cortisol is probably too high, or how does that work?
Well, there's a number of different signs that I like to look for. And as you described in that lovely introduction, thank you so much, I have looked at 10,000 women in the past 10 years to identify the top seven hormonal problems that they have. And number one is high cortisol. So what I could do is we could do one of two things, and maybe you could tell me which would work better for our lovely people listening. I could either describe what it looks like kind of at three different stages of a woman's life, or I could just throw out some questions that give people a sense of whether this is a problem for them or not.
You know, I'd like both, if you could.
Okay.
Because questions first, the questions, because then I think everyone starts to think, okay, does this relate to my life? And then when you paint the picture, I think that it can really help with the clarity of it.
I agree. Well, your wish is my command. So let me just run through a few questions. Some of these are from my book, and I use questionnaires in my office all the time. So I've got this virtual medical practice, and I've been using questionnaires for more than 10 years, refining them. So I'm just going to run through some questions, and I'd like for your listeners maybe to have a Word document open on their computer or a pad of paper, and you can just make a tick mark if any of these are a yes for you. So do you have or have you experienced in the past 6 months a feeling that you're constantly racing from one task to the next? Do you feel wired yet tired? Do you struggle to calm down before bedtime, or do you get a second wind that keeps you up late? Do you have difficulty with disrupted sleep, meaning that you wake up 1, 2, or 3 a.m.? Do you have a sense of anxiety or feeling nervous, and it's really hard to stop worrying about things that are beyond your control? Do you feel quick to anger? Do you scream or yell? Do you have memory lapses or feel distracted, especially when you're under stress? Do you have sugar cravings? Maybe you need a little something after lunch or dinner, usually of the chocolate variety. Do you have an increased abdominal circumference? So this is your waist measurement. Classic is for it to be more than 35 inches, but the whole idea here is the muffin top. Do you have skin problems such as eczema or thin skin? And when I say thin skin, I mean both physiological and psychological. Bone loss, high blood pressure, high blood sugar, and that was one of the signs I had when I was 32 years old. And then finally, some of these other things I've mentioned, difficulty recovering from injury, getting frequent colds. One other sign to watch for is pink or purple stretch marks on your belly or back. Those you actually want to take to your local doctor.
Really? What do those mean?
Well, we're talking about kind of garden variety high cortisol today, which is what I see in about, I did a survey of my patients looking at this, and I found it in about 80% of them. And there is a medical condition called Cushing's disease, which is where you have really high cortisol, and it's usually caused by something like a tumor or something going on in your adrenal glands, those cute little endocrine glands in your mid-back on top of your kidneys. And that is an extreme form of high cortisol that you would definitely want your doctor to check out and diagnose for you. So we want to be careful to separate the information and education that we're talking about today from medical advice, because I can't give our people medical advice. So that's a more extreme form of high cortisol, very rare. That conventional medicine recognizes. Most conventional medicine does not recognize this more common kind of high cortisol, what I call the hot amygdala, you know, sort of women who get stressed out pretty easily or overwhelmed.
And so how many, when we were doing that checklist, how many that we've checked yes to, should we have a pretty good gauge on the fact, okay, I'm definitely struggling with my cortisol levels?
So five or more, I think it's a slam dunk. You have high cortisol, let's go immediately to some of the lifestyle changes. If you have three to five, I recommend that you ask your local doctor to do some testing for you. So you can test your cortisol in the morning, and if your doctor isn't willing to do that, you can also test on your own. There's some home tests that you can do.
And so now, like, let's say, I mean, I'm listening to this. I definitely wake up at 3 a.m. I'm there, or 1 or 2 or whatever that is, and I definitely have some there. We were talking a little bit about the profile. What does the visual profile look like of someone who's 40-something versus someone who's maybe 60-something?
Yeah. Well, I always like to start with what's the perfect hormonal specimen here, and then I'll go to the 40-something. So when I was in my 20s, I'm curious what it was like for you in your 20s too, Jackie. I was focused on my career. I was focused on finding a life partner. I wanted
Me
to get
too.
Married and have kids.
Yep.
You know,
exactly.
I was setting up my nest. my hormones were pretty optimal, even though I was going through my medical training and working way too many hours. I was flexible and accommodating. I didn't fly off the handle. Rarely before my period I would do that. I had a goldfish and like little else to be concerned about. I was pretty free and unburdened.
I was in venture capital. I was an entrepreneur working constantly, but I was very adaptable. I was really able to roll with things pretty easily.
Yeah, so women in their 20s are the perfect hormonal specimen. We know this from good science that 24 is sort of the ideal age. You're adaptable, as you said, you're accommodating, and, you know, you roll with the punches.
Mm-hmm.
And then at some point in your 30s, for me it was age 32, for others it's age 35, you start to have your ovaries starting to sputter.
Mm-hmm.
And that leads to the very start of perimenopause. A lot of people think perimenopause doesn't happen until your late 40s.
Mm-hmm.
But there are actually subtle signs that begin on average at age 35. And it includes some of these questions that we talked about. So you start to feel like you fly off the handle more easily, sleep becomes more of a challenge, you know, your children really change things. Honestly, I could work 120 hours a week for about 10 years. It wasn't until I had my first kid at 32 that I really started to feel the effects
I had my first child at, so did I. I had my first child at 32, but of course I didn't have your background. So I just sort of thought, okay, this is why I'm now in my 30s, things change.
You know, and that's what we do, right? I mean, I was fortunate in that I had this medical training, and when I was 32, depressed, strung out, burning the candle at both ends, trying to work and be a mom, in couples therapy, no sex drive, I looked to, you know, what is going on medically? I'm a hormone expert. Why? What is going on with my hormones? How can I biohack this? How can I turn myself into a guinea pig and figure out why I feel so bad at such a young age? But most women don't have that, right?
Yeah, and is the muffin top that starts really in the 30s that just was completely non-existent, is that almost the biggest visual clue that something's going on?
It is the red flag.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, and I think a lot of us experience that. Some of us, of course, you know, have had weight struggles for long periods of time. But I mean, you completely see someone in their 30s, and you know, it just doesn't really happen with a lot of 20-year-olds.
It doesn't happen. You see all these 20-year-olds rocking their low-rise jeans, and then at some point in your 30s, it's just like, oh my gosh, I can't wear those jeans anymore. You know, they feel like sausage casings.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
It's not you. It's probably cortisol. And the other piece that goes with it is the sugar cravings. So I started to hear jungle drums when I was 32. In addition to the muffin top, I had these sugar cravings that were out of control. You know, I wanted chocolate. I wanted a glass of wine pretty much every night. You know, that's when you start to have these cravings.
Mm-hmm. So I'm sure so many people can relate to this. What's the picture of cortisol imbalance, I guess, if that's the word I'd be using?
Yeah, great question. You know, I figured out how to biohack my cortisol. It took me about 3 months to do it. And I think it's really valuable to sort of say, okay, for someone who's in their 40s, I'm 45 now, this is what it looks like when your cortisol is in balance. And I had to become a yoga teacher to really be able to embody this. So the idea when cortisol is right-sized, when it's in that Goldilocks position, not too high, not too low, and not turning your brain into Swiss cheese, is that you feel calm, you feel cool, you don't feel reactive. There's a beautiful quote by Viktor Frankl where he says, in the gap between stimulus and response is your freedom. Now, I'm paraphrasing him. He's someone who was a psychologist and survived the Holocaust.
It's a very, very heavy book, but Man's Search for Meaning, it's got to be on my top 10 book list. He is just an he's an unbelievable perspective deliverer, among other things.
He absolutely is. And, you know, for many women who have cortisol that is like a runaway train, their life already feels like his book. So I just want to be careful to, like, pull out the juicy parts. But here's the idea. You bounce out of bed in the morning. You feel restored. You have the full, what I call the adrenal repair conversation every night when you sleep. You don't have disrupted sleep. There's no bags under your eyes because you slept well. You eat normally. You don't have these crazy blood sugar swings that make you want to have a glass of Zinfandel every night. You feel like your body has this beautiful rhythm, buoyancy. You feel positive and upbeat because if you have persistently high cortisol, it depletes you of those happy brain chemicals like serotonin and dopamine. We can get into what those do. But when I was 32, I had postpartum depression because my high cortisol completely burned through my happy brain chemicals. So when you're faced with stress, you don't recoil in horror. You sort of realize that everything is figure-outable. You've got these stressors on your plate, and you manage them one at a time. And you do everything you can with the stressors that you know are under your control.
Mm-hmm.
You're able to focus. Oh, go ahead.
Please keep. No, please. I of course, what you're saying leads to 100 more questions. So please keep going.
So just a couple more things. I mentioned some of these already, but just to close the loop, your blood pressure, your fasting glucose are completely normal. So you're not craving coffee the second that you wake up in the morning. You're not craving ice cream or, you know, the latest latte from Starbucks. You're able to get your tasks done with pleasure. You don't future trip on what's next. You know where your keys are. You know where your children are most of the time. Your kids don't bug you. When your partner acts out, you don't think immediately of divorce. You're able to breathe deeply on a regular basis. You're proactive and less reactive.
It almost seems like too good to be true that you could actually start to feel like that, or that something, and I know we're going to go over, this is just the first class about cortisol, and I know we're going to go over the thyroid and the Charlie's Angels, but are you suggesting that when you can get your cortisol balanced, that your personality that you once had comes back and your muffin top decreases? I mean, is that what you're suggesting?
That's exactly what I'm suggesting. You know, I have a 41-year-old woman that I saw this week who's got one child. Her daughter is 9 years old. And she said to me, she made 3 tweaks to her high cortisol. And she said to me when I saw her this week, you know, Dr. Sarah, I feel back home in my skin again. I don't know who that person was who came to see you 6 weeks ago, but I was just out of my mind. I just felt like I wasn't on my game. I wasn't able to manage really any stressors, especially managing a 9-year-old tween who was starting to approach puberty and adolescence. I couldn't do it. And I felt like it was a way in which I was falling short as a parent. I didn't realize it was biology. Biology. It was biology. It was her cortisol.
Mm-hmm. All right. So what's the prescription? I shouldn't say it in those words, but I have to know what we got to get the action plan to start feeling better, to get to target some of these things that really not only bring our life down, but our energy down, our weight, you know, all these things. I'm stumbling,
yeah.
But I want to hear. I need to know the action plan.
The action plan. Well, so I've got about 100 things that you can do that are proven to help you with lowering cortisol. But what I did with this woman was, number one, we talked about hitting the pause button. And this is one of those places where a lot of people, again, have their eyes glaze over. And I just want to say to you, stay with me. Stay with me here for a moment, because we know this is true for me. This is true for me when I was 32. It was true for this woman who saw me this week, who's 41. Most of us are really good at pressing the pedal to the metal. And I bet you are, Jackie, especially with your venture capital background from your 20s.
Yes.
We are good at going fast. We are good at rocking our careers. We are good most of the time at parenting, whatever it is you're parenting. Maybe you're parenting a mission. Maybe you're parenting children. We're not so good at stopping, especially the stopping that needs to happen for prevention, to manage proactively your Charlie's Angels, especially your cortisol. Now, this is true for me, but if you think about a race car driver, just for a moment, I know this is a very masculine analogy. Race car drivers don't develop mastery from driving fast. They actually develop mastery from learning when to take a pit stop, from learning when to do that preventive stop that does exactly what they need for their tires, for their gas, for everything they need to keep their gas tank where it needs to be, to keep their energy high, to be a effective race car. So that's the kind of idea that I want to bring in here. And there's so many ways to hit the pause button. I really like to personalize it because, you know, for some women, I'll say yoga, meditation, Tai Chi, and they just look at me bug-eyed. They're like, no. I'm not coming to you and paying these fees and you tell me to go do your yoga class. So I like to really cast a wide net here. And one of the things that I did for this woman, because she was the type who's just like, I'm not sitting on some cushion for 30 minutes every morning. That's not me. So I assigned her tiara time. So the idea is that you get some tiara. It can be a cheap one. You can spend some money on some rhinestones. And the tiara time is where you hit the pause button. Yeah, this is essential. So this is a prescription that I want you to develop. Tiara time raises oxytocin almost as effectively as orgasm. I'm going to get to orgasm in a moment. But raising your oxytocin lowers your cortisol. So it's one of the most effective ways to manage stress. I don't want to have that same old boring conversation about stress and the fact that we're supposed to reduce stress. I want you to manage your cortisol as aggressively, and girlfriend time is one of the most effective ways to do this.
I love your analogy about the race car driver because I didn't realize that. I didn't realize that you're right. To be a good race car driver is when you stop, when you start to do all the maintenance, not driving as fast as you can.
That's right, and it's a hard piece for women to get. We are wired to give and wired to breastfeed not just our babies but like the entire world. You know, there's one of the feelings in your body when your cortisol is high, when it's a runaway train, is that you feel this kind of anxious jitteriness. If you don't solve someone's problems immediately or you don't figure out what needs to happen or what you can do for them, and that is over-providing. You know, my friend Jennifer Loudon defines over-providing in a beautiful way. She says, over-providing is when you give more than is sustainable, probably for the wrong reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And women are wired to do this. So yes, the race car driver, that idea that it's actually essential to your health and to managing your cortisol, that you learn how to hit the pause button, that you learn how to stop the race car, it will make you more effective.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bit of an irony.
I know. We have those two things. Well, what's next? Let's say this is, it sounds great, but I'm even thinking of my own excuses in my head saying, okay, well, I'm going to do that, but gosh, can't control when my other friends are still trying to put the gas pedal on as fast as they can and they can't get together. Or sometimes I think, gosh, I'd love to take half an hour out for myself right now, but if I just get this done, then I'll have the half an hour, because that's kind of what some of us explain in our head. And I just want you to go through all the things that we can start to do and have this layered approach, because even if we do a little of it, it's going to start making huge inroads into this problem.
Sure. Well, this is what I call step one of the Gottfried protocol. And the next piece that we can move into in just a moment is filling in the nutritional gaps that happen when you are a stress case. But one last thing I want to say about hitting the pause button is that orgasm is an incredibly effective hormone therapy. And I want to be a little cautious about this. I'm a gynecologist, so I talk about orgasm and vulva and vagina all the time. It's part of my everyday bread and butter conversation. Women 35 to 55, and they asked about whether they would rather have sex or be on Facebook. And 20% of them said they'd rather be on Facebook than have sex. And I was surprised that the number was so low. Because
I am too. I thought you were going to say 80%.
Right? I mean,
I did. I thought you were going to say 80%. Was that study anonymous? Or I'm just curious. I definitely thought the number would be a lot higher than that.
Yeah, maybe it was on Facebook, and that's why the 20% is much lower than I would expect. I did an anonymous survey in my practice. So I did a study of 6,000 patients last year, and I had a sociologist do it so that there was no bias. She did it anonymously and asked about sex drive and weight loss and energy, and we found that 80% of my 11,000 clients feel that their sex drive is not what they want it to be. They felt like they were having mercy sex. We can talk about what that is. And they were just desperate for some natural solutions.
Mm-hmm.
So getting back to the point here, because we've got this protocol that we're going through, we're still on this step number one, which is to hit the pause button. What we know about female orgasm is that it lowers cortisol. It also makes your thyroid more efficient, which is the driver of your metabolism and your weight and also your mood. And it also helps with the tango between estrogen and progesterone that we're going to talk about in another session that we have. But I think it's so important to just say, if we could pause just for another science moment here.
Mm-hmm.
There's a really interesting study. You can kind of imagine how funny this study is. There was a study done looking at women having orgasms and looking at MRIs of their brain.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard for me to imagine pulling off this study. But so women having orgasms while in the MRI machine, they found that most women, 35 plus, have this part of their brain, the amygdala, which is in charge of fear, and I was talking about the hot amygdala earlier, kind of that hypervigilance, hyperarousal that so many of us start to have around 35.
Mm-hmm.
They found that women who have an orgasm, that is the only time that the hypervigilance centers of the brain actually go dark. It's the only time that they turn out the lights and stop being so hypervigilant. So this is a very effective thing. I'm not talking about like the 1 minute orgasm that you have with the vibrator. I'm talking about like a more lengthy, delicious, juicy orgasm. It doesn't have to be with intercourse, but I just think it's an important hormone therapy that's free that also lowers cortisol.
I am in shock right now because I, of course, well, first I have to say I get a little uncomfortable talking about this, and I don't even know why, because I just do. And the same thing sort of happened when we were talking about the cleanse with JJ, and she starts talking about how elimination is one of the most important parts, and she starts talking about poo and how your poo is supposed to be formed and how it looks. And I'm sitting here going, this is just disgusting, and I don't want to talk to you. I can't believe I'm talking about this. And, of course, you know, sexual energy and orgasm is not disgusting. I don't feel the same way. But it does seem to be a very private thing, and it seems to, you know, there's a lot of societal ways that we've grown up. A lot of people that I speak to that were forced into shame whenever they thought about orgasms, or, you know, different things have gone on. And, you know, I do feel when you're talking about it, there is a discomfort there, but it's good to even just talk out loud and say, okay, this is something that can really tremendous. Who would have thought that orgasms were linked to muffin tops? I wouldn't have known, you know, I mean, that's just not, so when you're talking about sort of, okay, here's something very direct that's tied to your cortisol levels, it makes me feel like, okay, well, you know, I know the elimination part of the cleanse was really, it was essential for getting toxins out. And this is just another piece of this puzzle to the cortisol. So for me, if anybody's out there sort of having this, and maybe no one has any discomfort talking about it, but if you do.
No, definitely people have a lot of discomfort. And I'm so glad you're bringing this up because, you know, I'm someone who talks about sex and orgasm so much that my poor husband just like, you know, wants to hide sometimes at a dinner party. But I think it's so important that we acknowledge how our culture does not have a healthy attitude about sex. And I really feel like we have an epidemic of women who have their lights out for one reason or another. And I'm not saying that to blame the women, because I think I know actually from the science that 70% of it is hormonal. And of that 70%, a lot of it is cortisol. So we have this epidemic of low sex drive, and we are ashamed to talk about it. You know, not only do we feel like we're not good enough as mothers, as workers, we feel like we're not extraordinary enough, not thin enough, we feel like we're not good enough in bed. You know, there's some women who have a really healthy sex life, and more power to them. I ask every woman who comes to see me, are you satisfied with your sex life? That is my number one screening question. But I can tell you 80% of the time, they're not. Mm-hmm. They either don't want to be having sex and they feel distress about it. They're having the mercy sex, you know, basically sex to keep the marriage together. Or they don't like the sex that's on the menu. They're bored out of their mind with the kind of sex that they're having with their partners. And this is kind of an interesting piece. When 50 Shades came out, I still think it's on the New York Times bestseller list. I mean, it has sold more paperbacks than any of the Harry Potter series. I mean, it's the fastest selling paperback ever, especially women 30 plus. And it tells me that it's not that women have no interest in sex. It may be that the type of sex that's on the menu is not what they want. So there's some complexity here to the whole sex piece. I don't want to be overly reductionistic or pathologizing about it. I just think it's one of those symptoms that we want to be tracking. And we also want to be looking at, okay, how can we hit the pause button? So there's Tiara time, there's going to yoga, there's meditation, there's hanging out with your girlfriends, and there's female orgasm. So let's, you know,
and
be
it is
complete
true.
About the
I
list.
I have seen, you know, people that are older than me that do have a healthy approach to orgasm and things like that. And I mean, and they are taking more time out for themselves. And it does sort of seem like, how are they doing that? What's going on? And the suggestion here is that the cortisol is balanced. This particular part of the equation has been addressed and it's in balance and able to support the life that you want.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. You know, it reminds me of when my husband, his name's David Gottfried, he's the founder of the U.S. Green Building Council. It's funny, when he read my book for the first time, The Hormone Cure, he works in San Francisco, and he would go walking at lunch, and he would just diagnose one woman after another. And he did it in a very loving way. It wasn't in a judgmental way, but he was just like, oh my gosh, okay, spare floaty around the midsection. Her cortisol's probably under out of control. Let's look at her. Okay, so she looks kind of young, but she's got a lot of wrinkles. It seems like maybe her cortisol is high too, and it's causing this accelerated aging. We know it does. We know that there's a 20X effect on cortisol on the collagen of your skin. So it makes you age prematurely externally, and then internally, in terms of your cells, high cortisol will make your telomeres shorten. I don't know if your folks have heard about telomeres. So telomeres are these cute little caps on chromosomes inside your cells. I'm going to make this astonishingly simple. And they're kind of like the plastic caps on shoelaces. If you are a stress case, like I was at 32, it makes your telomeres short and stubby, which is not good. You want them to be long and lovely. They are the best marker we have right now of biological as opposed to chronological aging.
Mm-hmm.
So you want your biological age to be young. You don't want to age and be old before your time, like I was at 32.
Mm-hmm.
And we know from studies that were done by Elizabeth Blackburn, who got the Nobel Prize for this work on telomeres, that if you have high cortisol, it is aging your telomeres prematurely.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, I'm obviously, in also that race car analogy, I am taking this very seriously versus when you're always hearing in the magazines or your parents, you got to slow it down, until there's a really clear reason why and what the consequences are, it's hard to actually do it. And this was... it's so clear why someone like me, and I'm sure everyone, needs to do this today. You need to start now.
No question. And I was just like you, Jackie. When I was in my 20s and 30s, my mother would say to me, you've got to slow down. Your life is so crazy. You know, I had a massage therapist who said, aggro, woman, you are so aggro. At least I was getting a massage. Massage has been shown to lower your cortisol. It's very effective.
Mm-hmm.
And I never really took it to heart until I had that health crisis at 32 when I delivered my baby. I had very high cortisol. I was a complete stress case. I was collecting for board certification in OBGYN, so I went back to work 4 weeks after having this beautiful baby that I wanted so much, and the joy of having this baby could not land with me.
Mm-hmm.
I had postpartum depression. I was offered exactly the wrong thing. I was started on Paxil, and my problem was cortisol, and it was driving up my blood sugar. It made it very hard for me to lose weight, and I had to figure that out, and what I want to do is shorten the learning curve for other women. Don't wait until you have that crisis and you have that prescription for the latest antidepressant in front of you.
Mm-hmm. So this is the step one of cortisol. Are there more steps to cortisol? Because I know the next class we're going to talk about the second part of the Charlie's Angels, which is your thyroid.
About the herbal therapies, the botanicals that have been proven in randomized trials, which are the best evidence to turn around the high cortisol.
Mm-hmm.
How does that sound?
Yeah, perfect.
Okay,
especially part of us loves the thought that there's also something that we can take that can help us with getting the cortisol back in balance. That it's a layered approach, so if we just keep doing a lot of these things, it'll all start to come together.
That's right. And one thing that I think is so important, I can't remember if I talked about my great-grandmother before, but I had this radical great-grandmother who would not show up at our house like other grandmothers with gum and Barbies and See's candy. She would show up with suitcases of whole foods, of wheat berries and kale and beets. And she really believed that you don't find the answer to health in a pill bottle. And just as I don't think you find the answer to health in an antidepressant bottle unless you have severe depression, I also would say that you don't find the answer to health in a supplement bottle only. And that's why I think this layered approach is so important. But that being said, when you have unmanaged stress and cortisol is kind of running the show, what happens is that you make more rust in your body. You produce more free radicals, and that tends to deplete you of certain micronutrients, including vitamin B1, B5, B6, B12, vitamin C, and tyrosine. So I really recommend that people take an excellent B vitamin, a B complex.
And we're going to we're actually, just to interrupt you just for 1 second, pardon me, my daughter's like, don't be an interrupting chicken. I don't know if you've read that before, but because that's what they say at school. But for everybody listening to this, I know that sometimes when we start to talk about this, it's hard to, you know, write really quickly of what she's saying. And, you know, we're going to put together really Dr. Sarah's package for the cortisol so that she'll talk about this, but we'll also have it very easy for you to be able to understand what's in this.
Yes, and this is so important to me. You know, when you already feel overwhelmed, I want to make this astonishingly simple.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think it's important that you start with just one thing. What is the one thing that you're going to do this week? Because you don't, when you're overwhelmed, often you don't want a big project. We've talked about that before.
Mm-hmm.
So
absolutely.
Those are, yeah, right. I mean, those are the things that get depleted. And so I recommend supplements to fill those nutritional gaps. And then I've got some good news here within this particular category in terms of food. You know, I've been bad-mouthing chocolate a little bit, but on cortisol, small doses of chocolate, especially the high cacao chocolate, 75% or higher, have been shown to lower cortisol.
Mm-hmm.
So small
wow.
doses of chocolate give you magnesium, and it also lowers cortisol.
This concludes part one of Dr. Sarah's class on cortisol. Now, if you have any comments or questions, please post them in the team or please send them in to us. And in part two, we're going to delve even deeper on the ways that can help you manage your cortisol imbalance. So see you in part two.